Honor of State versus Darius Carter and State versus Miguel Roman Rosado. May we please have appearances of counsel.
Morning, Your Honor. Deputy Attorney General Regina Oberholzer on behalf of the state.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Joseph J. Russo, Deputy Public Defender, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Darius Carter.
Good afternoon. Allison Perrone, First Assistant Deputy Public Defender, on behalf of Mr. Roman Rosado.
Good afternoon. Karen Thompson, Senior Staff Attorney at the ACLU of New Jersey.
Good afternoon. CJ Griffin of Pashman Stein Walder Hayden for the Latino Leadership Alliance of New Jersey.
Welcome, counsel, and good afternoon. Ms. Oberholzer, please.
May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine.
New Jersey's license plate frame provision is clearly and precisely written. A license plate frame may not conceal or otherwise obscure any part of any marking imprinted on a vehicle's registration plate. Based on this language, the police officers in these two cases stopped the defendants because the cars they were driving had license plate frames that covered some or all of the writing printed at the bottom of the license plates. The officer's understanding of the statutes in these cases was correct. Throughout the motor vehicle code, the registration numbers are referred to specifically, but the word marking is used generally, including when authorizing or requiring the words garden state and other phrases to be printed at the bottom of license plates. To be clear, the statute's not violated because garden state's a required marking. It doesn't matter whether the words covered by a frame are garden state, disabled veteran, or battleship New Jersey. These are all markings within the meaning of the statute and cannot be covered by a frame. Moreover, the statute prohibits frames that conceal or obscure any part of any marking and not frames that make words on a frame indecipherable or unreadable. So the frame on Roman Rosado's car was just as much a violation as the one on Carter's car. Any other interpretation would make the words any part meaningless, and that would be a violation of the rules of statutory construction. The panel in Roman Rosado, however, ignored this plain language and rewrote the statute, holding that a frame is only a violation if critical identifying information is obscured so as to be less legible. But that's not what the statute says. Bills that would have amended the statute consistent with that language were proposed during the last legislative session and never even moved out of committee. And an identical bill has been opposed this session and has also not moved out of committee, strongly suggesting that the language in those bills and in the opinion in Roman Rosado is not reflective of legislative intent. Moreover, both defendants in these cases have raised several constitutional challenges to the statute, but this court did not grant certification on those issues. Like all statutes, the provision is deemed to be constitutional and the defendant must prove beyond reasonable doubt that it's not. The defendants in these cases have not met that burden. There's no constitutional right to a license plate frame, and the legislature could have banned frames altogether. Instead, they chose a clear, bright line rule rather than a vague readability provision that would have been open to conflicting interpretations by motorists and police officers alike. And this court should interpret the statute accordingly. Finally, in Roman Rosado, in his case, once the appellate division determined that there was not reasonable suspicion to stop the car, the panel should not have gone on to address the secondary issue of whether the officer was justified in reaching into the car to retrieve an object that he was concerned could be a weapon. Having decided to address the issue, they applied the wrong analysis and reached the wrong result. This was a proper protective sweep of a limited area of the passenger compartment of the car to retrieve a single item that the officer saw while legally removing the defendant to execute outstanding warrants. There was a passenger in the car within arm's reach of an item that the officer was concerned could be a weapon, and the trial court correctly determined that the officer was warranted in securing the gun. For these reasons, the state asks that this court reverse the published appellate division of State versus Roman Rosado and affirm the opinion in State versus Carter.
Counsel, if someone drives out of a dealership and a license plate cover has been affixed to the plate that blocks some marking on the plate, they're liable under the statute, right?
Yes, they are.
And that's because they're presumed to know the law, right?
Correct.
Is the dealer also potentially liable for aiding and abetting a violation of the statute?
Not under the statute as it was ultimately adopted, no.
Under an aiding and abetting theory, could a dealer be held responsible for providing the plate, intending that the plate be used, and knowing that it's going to block part of a marking?
Theoretically, yes.
And so could charity groups and booster groups and nonprofit groups, all of whom do some form of distribution of these plates, also be held liable under the statute, as you've just told us?
I think that's more of a stretch because they're not actually putting the license plate frames on the cars.
Assuming that they're distributing these plates for that purpose and that they are used for that purpose, there's a theoretical aiding and abetting violation of this offense as well, no?
I suppose so, yes.
So when there's a significant public safety issue, law enforcement will often go to the source. Has there been any enforcement action against those who have created hundreds of thousands of these plates that violate the statute, the frames?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Has there been any outreach effort where someone reached out to Honda and others and said, stop doing this? These plates are creating a violation of the law?
Not to my knowledge, no.
So then what does that say about the argument that has been presented that this statute is essentially a pretext for stops, as Officer Warrington essentially testified?
Well, that wasn't Officer Warrington's testimony.
Well, take it away from the officer then.
But
what does that say as to the general concern?
Well, the statute was not written as a pretext for stops. It's clear from the legislative history that it was written out of a concern that there were too many of these license plates on the frames on the road. In fact, one of the earlier versions of the statute imposed a higher fine on dealers and that put these plates on cars than on motorists who had them. So it was directed at dealers specifically.
So the statute may not have been drafted with the intent that it serve as a pretext for stops, but the question is, and that I'm asking you, is it being used in that fashion? What guidance has been given to law enforcement about how to enforce this statute?
To my knowledge, none.
And so they have unfettered discretion to pull over any number of citizens whose frames violate the statute?
Yes, that's true of every provision of the motor vehicle code. Not every taillight that's out is pulled over. Not every tinted window is pulled over. Not everybody who has something hanging from their rearview mirror is pulled over. Not everybody who speeds is pulled over. By a long shot.
Certainly someone could be pulled over if they've covered up part of the number, the license plate number itself. But as you interpret the statute, even a de minimis covering of one of the letters in Garden State justifies an officer stopping someone. Is that right?
Yes, because the statute's been written with a bright line rule so as not to leave the decision of how much is too much up to the discretion of the officer.
So what rational purpose is being advanced by having an officer pull someone over if 1 or 2 or 5% of the words Garden State are covered, but are otherwise identifiable?
Again, because the legislature didn't want the discretion to be left at with the decision of the officer. The vague readability statutes that exist in many other states are leave too much discretion up to the decision of the officer. And the bright rule. The bright line rule adopted here leaves no discretion and is simply any is too much. so that there's no discretion with the officer and everybody knows what the rule is. So there's no question of how much is too much.
And again, the rationale behind stopping someone when the plate is completely legible is what?
Simply that any violation of the statute is a violation of the statute, and it's a bright line rule.
What purpose does it further, though, that rule? In other words, I'm assuming the state has some purpose in creating this absolute bright line rule where no discretion is allowed. What is the purpose they're trying to, what are they trying to accomplish by the bright line rule?
So, because any covering can possibly, under certain circumstances, in certain conditions, I mean, certainly when an officer is driving directly behind a car, minor covering is not going to prevent reading, but there may be circumstances where you're at an, you know, you've got a very blurry image from a surveillance camera and you're only getting a partial view of the plate.
I'm not asking, and the chief exempted this. We're not talking about obstruction of identifying markings that identify the owner or operator of the vehicle. We're not talking about numbers. We're not talking about the state indication in the middle of the numbers. What is the reason, what is being accomplished by this bright line rule? And if you can tell me an example of how it's accomplished, I'd love to hear it.
For example, if you have a crime scene and you have a surveillance video and you only get an image that shows you a portion of the plate and you only get a third of the image and you can only see a portion of the letter.
No, I'm not
talking. It's going to be helpful.
That's not the question I'm asking. I get it. If the number, letter, state is obscured, I'm asking what is the purpose being accomplished by the rule that if half of Garden State is covered, there's nothing obstructing the view of the numbers, the letters, the state, you can tell the owner, you can see them going through the toll booth. What is the purpose for that bright line rule that anything, any obstruction, part of the G, part of the S is obstructed, that is a violation. What's the purpose, the goal?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you don't have the top of the plate or all of the numbers and you only have a portion of the bottom plate, being able to see all of the letters at the bottom of the plate, maybe all in conjunction with half of the registration numbers, may be able to, you know, putting together a puzzle, be what you need to identify the car so that you can help identify a car that's been at a crime scene, for example.
Can I ask you a question about one of the questions posed by the Chief Justice? Did you say that there is no law that directly applies to a dealership?
No, one of the early proposals was drafted to actually impose higher fines on dealerships.
But there is a law that specifically prohibits dealerships from selling these courtesy plates. And there is a fine attached to it, correct? I'm looking at 39.3.33C. Are you familiar with that statute? If not, I'll read it to you, or if you have your book. And it says, a person shall not sell, offer for sale, distribute, ... And then it goes to license plates covers, knowing that such merchandise is designed or intended to be used to conceal, degrade, delete legibility of any part of any marking imprinted upon a vehicle's license plate for the purpose of evading law enforcement. Right? Are you familiar with that statute?
No, actually, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not.
Okay. Because this is following up, because there are cars every day leaving dealerships across the state with all these courtesy plates that are obstructing part or all of Garden State. And as a result of the Attorney General taking actions against the dealerships, you've now empowered all the police officers across the state to arbitrarily enforce the law. And this is a point I think the Chief Justice was making. And isn't that a problem?
But it doesn't alter the fact that the cars are in violation of the statute.
Ms. Oberholzer, do you know the number of tickets that have been issued for 39.3-33?
No. And that wouldn't answer the question of how many have been issued for violations of the license plate frame provision.
So the number of tickets, according to the AOC, for 2018 and 2019 was roughly 117,000 and 120,000. Do you know the number that were issued for the violation of the statute that Justice Alvin just read to you?
No, I do not.
Zero. Dating back to 2012, according to the AOC. Should we be concerned about that?
Yes.
And why not then narrow the statute in a way that could address legitimate safety issues?
Well, I think that anything that covers the markings does address legitimate safety issues, which is why both statutes exist.
You think then that, I'm looking at the photo that I'm sure we've all seen in the Roman Rosato opinion, where most of the words Garden State are visible. And I assume you would agree that it is legible, correct? That particular plate involving defendant Roman Rosato?
Yes.
You think it's necessary for the statute to operate as against a plate of this sort for a public safety purpose?
I think that there can be circumstances, lighting conditions and so forth, where that plate, those words could be difficult to read, yes.
In this case, on that particular plate?
Yes, I think that's a photograph that's been taken to make those words as legible as possible. And I think there would be circumstances under which they might not be as legible.
And that would impede the ability to identify this plate, which has New Jersey emblazoned unimpeded on the top.
If you had a situation where you could not see the full plate, yes. If you were at an angle where you did not get all that information. Plates don't always need to be identified from an angle where you can see all the information on the plate, or where somebody has the chance to see all the information on the plate. It's not always police officers driving behind a car needing that information.
Is it your position that the statute is ambiguous at all, or that it's unambiguous?
No, I think the statute is very plainly clear. There's no ambiguity in the language of the statute at all.
But it's written in a way to give officers discretion as to whether or not to pull over a car based upon its application?
No.
No what?
I don't think there's any discretion. I think the discretion comes from the fact that it's violated too many times for them to stop everybody on the road, just like speed limit violations and a lot of other provisions of the Motor Vehicle Code.
Mm-hmm. And have you walked through the parking garage and parking lots surrounding the Hughes Justice Complex and looked at the plates?
Back when there were cars in it, yes.
I would imagine that a substantial number of those cars would have covers that violate this statute.
A fair number, yes.
And the question that I think Justice Lubecki was just asking and that I was, is the statute gives complete discretion to the officers as to which one of those vehicles they could stop and then pursue.
Yes, but that's the same with many provisions of the Motor Vehicle Code, again, including speeding violations, tinted windows, any number of other provisions.
Yes, and a speeding violation presents a potential public safety hazard. I'm struggling for the purpose to solve public safety problems with respect to this statute.
If a license plate is in any way not able to be identified under any circumstances, that problem can't be remedied once the car's in a situation where you need to identify it and you can't. That problem needs to be addressed in advance.
And just to be clear, if 2% of the words Garden State were concealed or obscured or covered, that would be enough.
Under certain circumstances, it could be, yes.
Well, under every circumstance, based on what you've just said, no? That's how you read the statute.
If it makes it unreadable or difficult to read under certain circumstances, it could be, yes.
Then I'm not sure if there's a crack there. I thought you were going on a plain language read.
Any violation
yes. of the statute? Are you articulating a different standard now?
No, I'm not. I am just saying that there could be circumstances under which it could be rational. It could be needed because there could be lighting conditions and so forth where that could be necessary. So, and it's up to the officers in the field to decide whether or not it's enough. The legislature has issued a bright line rule so that it's not left to the discretion of the officers.
So I understand your argument that there are a number of motor vehicle laws that could be subject to arbitrary enforcement. But is that an argument for like expanding the field of operation for arbitrary enforcement when you know that maybe 50% of the cars are in non-violation because the Attorney General isn't enforcing it at the front end? It's allowing all these cars to spew out of these dealerships in violation of the law and permitting police officers maybe to profile people using this law. That doesn't sound to me like an enlightened public policy. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think that this law, like many laws, was written because there was a violation and it's simply become a broader violation. And it's not just dealer plates. It's, plates you buy at, stores on the boardwalk. It's becoming more of a problem and
So should we not look? So there's this doctrine of constitutional avoidance. And so arbitrary enforcement of law, use of laws for potentially profiling. And you know that your adversaries have arguments that the marking and the obscuring is not a de minimis violation, does not permit a de minimis violation. It's got to be an actual legibility issue. Like, why wouldn't that be a rational approach to narrowly construe the statute that may be susceptible to two interpretations, your interpretation and their interpretation? Go ahead.
Because that interpretation leads at just as much up to the discretion of the officers to decide what they think is legible as. And this is a bright line rule that doesn't leave anything up to the discretion of the officers.
Except which cars to stop.
No, that still leaves it up to the discretion of the officers to decide what they think is legible and not legible, as opposed to this bright line rule.
But your argument is essentially that any obstruction of any part of a license plate might, when you need to identify the vehicle because of a crime scene or an accident scene or flight, because of the way the it's seen or the way it appears, it might obstruct the identification of the vehicle.
Correct.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Not on this issue. I would like to discuss the Hine issue.
Please go ahead.
Because I know this issue has come before this court several times, but even if this court were to determine that either of these officers' interpretation in either Roman Rosato or in Carter were the entire words, and we say throughout our briefs that the entire words Garden State were covered, but we don't actually know what words were at the bottom of the license plate because you can't see it in Carter. That was a reasonable interpretation in light of the plain language of the statute and the fact that there were no cases directly on point, published or unpublished, that was a reasonable interpretation. And under Hine, the officer's understanding of the facts and the applicable law is what constitutes reasonable suspicion. And I know this court's addressed that issue and twice before and found that the officer's mistake of law wasn't reasonable. But I think given the language in this case of the statute, this is a much more clear-cut case of the statutory language supporting a reasonable mistake of law.
Counsel, we have not yet adopted the reasonable mistake of law. And in Sutherland, we acknowledge the difference between the Kagan, Justice Kagan approach and the majority's approach. My question to you is, have you taken a look to see of those states that might be more inclined to follow the Justice Kagan approach of requiring a harder question of interpretation to meet what is a reasonable mistake of law, how that test has been applied? Has that test been met in any state? And if so, under what circumstances?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I do believe it has been met, and several states have declined to apply the good faith exception.
I'm not talking about states that have rejected the good have rejected right. the majority's approach and gone on their own path. I'm talking about the ones that have said they're following the higher standard required.
Oh, the higher standard required. We're not asking the state that need for the higher standard requirement. We're asking for the concurrence requirement.
Well, that's what I'm sorry. I'm calling the Justice Kagan standard the one
the
that
higher standard.
The higher standard.
The higher standard.
What's entailed to meet that? How would an officer know what that higher standard means?
Well, it would be. I'm not quite sure I understand the question because
You mentioned before no cases are directly on point. So that suggests you think if there's not a case deciding the interpretive question, that's a factor.
Right.
Are there any other factors that other cases have recognized that go into the calculus of whether or not the Justice Kagan standard has been met?
I'm not.
If you're not familiar, then
just... I'm not. I just think that this is about as cut and dry as you get. There is simply no way there's no way they could have researched the issue. There's no one they could have called that would have told them something different.
Well, should the standard depend on whether or not the Attorney General has decided to give advice on this subject or training on this subject?
That would certainly be a relevant consideration. There's just simply nothing that these officers could have done. Those would all be relevant considerations. If there'd been training that they had attended or could have attended, if there had been any way that they could have gotten a different interpretation, but there simply wasn't. And, you know, Hine would be a very limited application ruling for this court to adopt, because as soon as there was a controlling final decision on the issue,
what does that mean? An appellate division published decision?
One that was final, that this court had declined certification on, or certification hadn't been sought on, or an opinion from this court, then there's failure to follow that is no longer a reasonable mistake of law. So once this court rules on this issue, failure to follow this court's decision on this issue is no longer a reasonable mistake of law.
But any other motor vehicle statute that we have not interpreted and decided to deny cert on, or we've taken and interpreted in some way, could give rise to a reasonable mistake of law by an officer?
Could, unless the language is pretty clear.
What I'm trying to get at. How do you implement Justice Kagan's standard? It sounds nice on paper, but what does it actually mean in application? That's my question to you.
Well, I think that if this court were to rule that the language is clear in what it says, as it did in Sutherland, then...
Well, then you have no reasonable mistake.
Then there's no reasonable mistake of law. But if this court were to parse out language that seems very clear on its face, dictionary definitions and markings are markings, and then to say, but we're going to strike down a statute on other grounds or limit the statute on other grounds aside from its plain language, then that is not something it's reasonable to expect an officer to know until this court has done so.
So under your standard, any time an attorney could stand up and make an argument for ambiguity, that would give rise to a reasonable mistake of law setting. Is that right?
No, I mean, we argued for ambiguity in Sutherland, and this court decided that we were wrong, and we respect that ruling. So the ultimate decision will rest with the courts on whether or not it's a reasonable mistake of law, but I do think the cases are going to be few and far between.
Ms. Oberholzer, did you want to touch on protective sweep as well?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I think that this case, protective sweep cases are fact specific, but you need to look at it from the, based on what the officer testified to. And this officer saw an object that he believed to be a weapon, and he didn't search the car. He didn't, he just seized one item that he was concerned was a weapon that he saw when he was reasonably in a place to see it. And it's really very consistent. It's more than was in London. It's very consistent with, Michigan v. Long. In fact, in Lund, this court listed various things that could give rise to reasonable suspicion, and they looked at Mims and found that just the officer seeing a bulge that they thought might be a weapon was sufficient in that case, and I think this is very akin to that. And under those circumstances, that was reasonable suspicion to seize that weapon for his safety. The court also in Michigan v. Long recognized that the officer doesn't have to choose between securing the person he's arresting and seizing the item. He can do one or the other, or ordering the passengers out of the car and securing the weapon. He has that option between one or the other.
Other questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add?
No, thank you. I'll reserve for rebuttal.
We'll have you back. Thank you. Ms. Perrone.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, when motor vehicle violations become, as they would be in this case, virtually unavoidable, Fourth Amendment safeguards become ineffectual. And the state's interpretation of 39:33 results in overcriminalization, and it leads to an absurd result, casting a law enforcement net over hundreds of thousands of New Jersey drivers, the majority of whom do not even realize that a conventional license plate frame, often put on their car by a car dealer, could be interpreted to violate the law. 5 years ago, the defendant in Scriven came before this court because of an officer's unreasonable enforcement of a motor vehicle statute. And less than 2 years later, the defendant in Sutherland did the same. And now we have two more defendants here with another unreasonable, overbroad use of a motor vehicle statute to effectuate a pretextual unconstitutional stop. The state's overly broad interpretation of 39:3-33 ignores its plain meaning and it defies common sense. A common sense reading of the statute means that a license plate frame must not impair the readability of required identifying information on the license plate. There's two errors in the state's proposed reading of 39:3-33. First, conceal or obscure must be given its plain meaning, which is to hide or make more difficult to see. So none of the information on Mr. Roman Rosado's license plate, not the important identifying information, and not even the Garden State cosmetic slogan, none of it was concealed or obscured. And the appellate division's decision can be affirmed just on that basis alone, without any further interpretation of the statute. But also, any marking must be read sensibly in the context of the entire statute to be referring to any legally required identification marking, such as the license plate number, and not to the optional cosmetic slogans, such as Garden State, Square Dancer, and the 70 to 100 additional plates, vanity plates that are authorized. These are reasonable common sense interpretations that comport with the plain meaning and the purpose of the statute. In the state's interpretation, criminalizing license plate frames that even touch upon the Garden State slogan, but do not block any legally required identification marking, would create a constitutional problem because the statute is not, if read that way, rationally related to any legitimate purpose, and it encourages arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. So this court should reject the state's overbroad interpretation of the statute and adopt the sensible interpretation in order to avoid constitutional infirmity. Just touch on my first issue regarding conceal or obscure. As I said, the plain meaning, it's common sense. It dictates something isn't blocked or obscured if, as in this case, it's fully readable. The officer in this case says he was able to completely read everything on the plate, including Garden State. And the trial judge found that without question, it was a readable license plate, which means it was not concealed or obscured.
Ms. Braun, are you saying that Garden State is not a marking or not required on the license plate?
I'm saying that this statute needs to be interpreted to not include cosmetic slogans such as Garden State to be markings that are required.
But the statute says what it says. Are you familiar with 39.3-33-2.2?
Yes.
So you know what it says. It talks about the Director of Division of Motor Vehicles shall cause to be imprinted, shall, in addition to other markings, which he shall prescribe the words Garden State. So that seems to me to suggest that Garden State's got to be on the license plate, unless the director permits the battleship New Jersey or some of these other markings, correct?
A truly strict reading of that statute would require Garden State to be on a license plate, even if it were a vanity.
Well, unless the legislature makes exceptions, which it's permitted to do. But just looking at that, because we're dealing with Garden State, that is a commandment that Garden State be on the license plate, correct?
Yes, the Garden State.
And it indicates that Garden State is a marking. It says, in addition to other markings, referring to Garden State, correct?
I think that there's an interpretation that you would read any marking the way that Your Honor's saying, but I think that it could also be read and should be read consistent with principles of constitutional avoidance to not be so broad. And to me, basically, that the legislature is saying they want Garden State to be on there.
I understand you're obscuring and concealing, so I'm just sticking with this because I want to hear what your other interpretation is. Cause to be imprinted thereon, in addition to other markings, which he shall prescribe, the words Garden State. What other interpretation is there that Garden State is not a marking?
You can interpret the statute as saying that the legislature is saying that Garden State needs to be there, in addition to all of the other things that are markings that are required to be there. Okay. And when you look within this statutory scheme, could the drafting of marking be a little bit less confusing? Yes, but when you look overall at the entire scheme, it suggests that the legislature was concerned with what was legally required identifying information. That was what the legislature.
This is the last question I'm going to ask you about this piece. Is that why would there have been the need for the words in addition to other markings if Garden State wasn't a marking? I'm trying to use some common sense looking at the statute. You wouldn't need those words in there at all if Garden State was not a marking in the mind of the commissioner, the director. You following me?
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, but I do think that in addition to other markings can mean Garden State in addition to all the markings that are required to be on the license plate. And that it doesn't have to be interpreted and shouldn't be interpreted as the legislature expressing its intent to regulate a cosmetic slogan such as Garden State. And when you apply common sense, the only reasonable interpretation is that it applies to markings that aren't required to be on a license plate and not to the optional cosmetic embellishments, club affiliations, advertising slogans that aren't required to be there in the first place. The driver's not required to have Garden State on their license plate. There's more than 70 other options. So the only sensible interpretation is that the statute doesn't apply to Garden State, but it applies to the unique identifying information that's required to be on the license plate, the registration number. And when we look for context to State versus Donis, where the court recognized the purpose of the statute is to ensure that identifying information is visible to determine whether the vehicle is lawfully registered. Well, Garden State can be found on millions of vehicles throughout the state. It's not identifying, it's a cosmetic design feature, and it's surplusage. And this is supported by looking at the rest of the statutory scheme, because a limitless number of other license plate slogans are authorized, which replace Garden State with this whatever other slogan, and indicates that the legislature was not overly concerned with Garden State or with whatever slogan was put there.
If we accept your argument, then the total covering up of Garden State or Battleship New Jersey is not a violation. Then we don't have to deal with the concealing or obscuring of Garden State. Your argument is that's off the table.
Correct, and the reverse as well. In this particular case, if the court only were to decide conceal and obscure, you would not have to reach the question of the marking, because under neither of those are satisfied in this case with this license plate.
Well, if that's a marking, then totally covering it up is a concealment. You have to concede that.
Totally covering it up if it's a marking, yes. Okay. But in this case, it's not even marginally covered up, which is why the court could just decide this based on conceal and obscure. And the interpretation that I'm advancing, it makes sense, because requiring an individual to display Garden State on their license plate would subject the statute to significant constitutional challenges. There's a potential First Amendment compelled speech problem under Woolley. There's other constitutional implications as well, because there would be no rational basis for this statute if we adopted the Attorney General's overly broad interpretation. As the Chief Justice mentioned, there would be no justification or no point to why the legislature would need to regulate Garden State. And in terms of a rational basis, I certainly concede the state has a legitimate interest in identifying vehicles and the owners of the vehicles. And one way to achieve that purpose is by not covering up the registration number. I don't dispute that, but the state doesn't have the same legitimate interest in penalizing the failure to display a slogan, a club affiliation, an advertised slogan, Garden State. Something that isn't required to be there is not a unique identifier, and literally millions of New Jersey residents have it on their plate. So unlike a registration number, it isn't necessary or useful to identify.
Ms. Perrone, can I just ask you a question about your marking definition? Do you include New Jersey as a required marking that cannot be obscured?
I think it's a closer case, Your Honor. I think that there is certainly a legitimate argument that the police officers need to be able to identify the plate as a New Jersey license plate. Whether that could be accomplished with the picture of New Jersey, whether you need to have the word New Jersey, whether the color, which is unique to our state, is sufficient. I think it is a closer question. But I think that Garden State or any of the other optional cosmetic slogans are not a close question. They're not necessary, they're not helpful, and there's no rational basis for the legislature to regulate them.
So your definition of marking before, when you were saying identifying numbers and letters, I mean, identifying the state is not, in your view, part of that identification marking.
No, I do think identifying the state is important. There are several ways on this license plate, though, to identify the state: the color, the picture of the state, the word New Jersey. So whether or not the word New Jersey is actually required, you know, I can see arguments on either side. I think it's a closer call, but I do definitely acknowledge that.
Wouldn't color be difficult if that's all you had in dark situations at night when there's not real good lighting? I think difference between like the light tan that we have and some light yellow other states have, or white states like Hawaii have. I think color would not be, if that was all you had, I don't think that would be sufficient, do you?
I understand that point, Your Honor. And, you know, like I said,
I didn't ask if you could understand it. Do you think that would be sufficient? Because I think you said the color would be one way.
I was giving examples of other ways the police officers would be able to determine the plate. But I agree with your point that there could be a circumstance where color would certainly make a difference. But again, that's not this case, right? There's no contention in either of these.
But are we making a rule not just about this case, but about the statute?
Well, I'm not asking Your Honor to make any kind of ruling about New Jersey. I'm asking this court to interpret this statute as requiring visibility of legally required identifying information.
Aren't there some cases where Garden State could be useful and helpful to law enforcement in identifying a vehicle?
Well, first of all, I think that would probably be a fairly unlikely situation for a couple of reasons. I'm not sure what angle someone would be at where they would only be able to see Garden State, but even assuming that, Garden State is literally on millions of license plates in New Jersey. So that's the first problem. And then the second problem is it's not the purpose. That's not why the legislature is allowing Garden State to be on there. It's because Garden State is cosmetic. It's a cosmetic slogan. So if you look at the color of a car, that might make it a little bit easier for you to identify the car. But that's not why we paint the car. It's cosmetic. So just that it might happen in a very specific, I would assume fairly unusual case, to increase the reliability or the effectiveness of an identification, that's not the purpose. That wasn't the legislature's purpose in putting Garden State on the license plate. And it's not a reason to interpret this statute so broadly.
My questions earlier focused on legibility and the active decision in the case where you're advocating now also involve that. You're asking for a broader ruling that exempts Garden State from consideration altogether, not a focus on legibility?
Well, like I said earlier, Your Honor, the court doesn't need to go that far for Mr. Roman Rosado. I mean, there's a legibility argument that's basically the conceal obscure argument, right? It's not concealed or obscured because it's legible. And that in and of itself is enough to affirm the appellate division's decision. But in terms of looking at this statute as a whole and whether the AG's interpretation of the statute is reasonable, then I would suggest that this is an opportunity for the court to go further to avoid constitutional infirmity and to interpret the statute reasonably to only require identifying information to be visible.
Are there any other issues you'd like to present on?
Yes, Your Honor. I just would like to speak to the issue of Hine and the unreasonable mistake of law. So as a preliminary matter, the court doesn't have to reach the issue of whether New Jersey should adopt Hine in this case, because the officer's overly broad interpretation and misreading of the plain language in terms of conceal and obscure, it wasn't reasonable. Whereas in this case, the frame only touches upon the cosmetic slogan, not required identifying information, but even if it had been, the fact that it touches upon it and leaves it completely 100% indisputably readable means that it's unreasonable for the police to have considered defendant having violated the statute. The police know that Garden State isn't required on the statute. They're familiar with vanity plates. So it's not reasonable to believe that the statute prohibits covering up something or even touching upon something that isn't required to be there in the first place. But if nevertheless, if the court reaches the issue of Hine, then this court, I urge this court to take this opportunity to unequivocally reject Hine as it undermines all of our Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. And really quite simply, the law is the law and it shouldn't change based on whether a particular police officer understands the law. And in New Jersey, with our strong history of protecting privacy rights, we shouldn't adopt a law that means that an individual would no longer have to actually violate the law in order to get pulled over for violating the law. In the Fourth Amendment context, the law is the yardstick for determining what's reasonable, and the facts, which are more fluid, are measured against that yardstick. The yardstick can't move. It can't be different for different people, depending on whether a particular officer actually understood the law. It's really, in a Fourth Amendment analysis, it's ultimately irrelevant what the officer believed the law to mean, because the relevant question is, and it always has been, against what interpretation of the law should the court assess the facts when they're deciding whether there was reasonable suspicion for a traffic stop. It's the court's interpretation of the law that's the yardstick, not the officer's. And the courts have to judge the facts against the correct interpretation of the law, not the mistaken interpretation of the law, no matter how reasonable it may have been. And Hine is really inconsistent with New Jersey's rejection of the good faith exception, right? Reasonable mistake of law and good faith, they're basically opposite sides of the same coin. So good faith is on the back end. Once a Fourth Amendment violation occurs, a court would still allow the evidence because the officer acted reasonably if you have a good faith exception, which we have rejected in New Jersey. And then Hine, or the reasonable mistake of law, is really on the front end, where the court would allow the evidence under the theory that there was never a Fourth Amendment violation in the first place, except there was, regardless of whether the officer was interpreting law reasonably or not. And laws are intended to put citizens on notice of their conduct, on notice of what conduct is forbidden or required, so they can conform their behavior. Well, it's impossible for a law-abiding citizen to structure their behavior to avoid an unwanted, a humiliating, a frightening motor vehicle stop if the police are permitted to stop individuals not based on what the actual law is, but on their own interpretation of the law or reasonable interpretation of the law. And it's for that reason that I urge also that Justice Kagan's concurrence should also be rejected. It's better than the majority opinion, but it's the same rationale. And if you agree that Hine is unsound and it's contrary to New Jersey's steadfast adherence to Novum Brino, then we shouldn't adopt it at all. Unless the court has any questions on that, I just wanted to speak briefly to the remaining issue about the search of the car. This case is governed by Robinson. The court's clearly spoken. A protective sweep of an automobile requires specific and articulable facts that warrant a belief that an individual in the vehicle is dangerous and that he or she may gain immediate control of a weapon. Police are not able to conduct a protective sweep whenever there's a potential presence of a weapon, and nor does the presence of a passenger justify a protective sweep of the vehicle unless there are particularized signs that the passenger presents a danger. Suspicion just doesn't automatically carry over to innocent passengers, particularly when the defendant has already been removed from the vehicle. And here, the passengers were not acting suspiciously, one of whom was a child, and neither was the defendant. He was completely cooperative. He didn't act suspiciously or disobey any instruction. And the police had not received any reports regarding him indicating that he was dangerous. And most importantly, because he was already removed from the vehicle, he couldn't gain access to the weapons. And just briefly regarding the white cloth that the officer saw, he testified 4 times that he wasn't sure what it was. And it was only when he was prompted by the prosecutor did he testify it could have been a weapon. Well, if that's enough to search, there's always going to be enough to search because there will always be the purse, the bag, the crumpled up piece of paper, the something in the car that could have been a weapon. So under these circumstances, the state did not meet its burden to justify the warrantless search. And we ask that the decision of the appellate division be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Perrone. Mr. Russo and Ms. Thompson as well, you're free to adopt as much of the prior argument as you can when we get to you. Mr. Russo, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. On September 24th, 2014, Darius Carter, a Black man, was subjected to what the trial court recognized as an absolutely pretextual stop with minuscule justification for violating 39.3-33. As stipulated by the parties at the motion hearing, Mr. Carter's license plate was clearly identifiable as a New Jersey plate, and his plate numbers and letters were not concealed or obscured. However, the Garden State slogan was blocked by the license plate frame, a common occurrence for thousands, if not millions, of New Jersey drivers. Based upon the prior arguments, I'd like to make three main points, and I've truncated those points based upon the prior arguments. First, the interpretation of the statute advanced by the Attorney General is in derogation of the legislature's goals. Those goals, as set forth by this court and State v. Donis, are to permit law enforcement to determine whether a vehicle is lawfully registered and to determine whether a vehicle has been stolen. Paragraph 3 of the statute must be interpreted sensibly rather than with hyper-literalism. The phrase any marking, when read in the context of the legislature's goals and neighboring statutes, was never intended to include Garden State. Indeed, pursuant to 39.3-32, new license plates are only mandated when the registration numbers are so defaced that they become not legible. Thus, the legislature had no intent of regulating the display of Garden State. Second, paragraph 3 of the statute is not rationally related to a legitimate state purpose and therefore violates due process. Simply put, the any marking language does not rationally advance the legitimate state interest of ensuring that motor vehicles are lawfully registered. Over the past several years, New Jersey has authorized approximately 100 specialty plates with many slogans and designs available. These specialty plates do not contain the Garden State slogan. Many of these specialty plates are available in neighboring states. Clearly, so long as the license plate numbers and letters are visible, the Garden State slogan is mere surplusage and should not be a basis for effectuating a motor vehicle stop. Further, the Attorney General's argument that the display of Garden State will assist with identifying suspects was rebuffed in Woolley v. Maryland over four decades ago. In Woolley, the United States Supreme Court expressed skepticism that the New Hampshire slogan, "Live Free or Die," could meaningfully assist with identification. A cosmetic slogan is not related to the registration status of a vehicle, nor does it meaningfully assist in identifying the vehicle. Third, the statute promotes pretextual stops, racial profiling, and selective enforcement. We know from the 1999 Attorney General interim report that law enforcement has historically utilized wide nets to investigate people of color. The Attorney General report stated that among individuals subjected to traffic stops in New Jersey, 77% were Black or Latino. The more recent 2016 state police data for violations of 39.3-33 is not much better. It reveals that 69% of all stops targeted minority drivers. This data is strong evidence that the license plate statute is being applied in a discriminatory manner. And the undisputed national data reveals that once stopped for a motor vehicle violation, Blacks and Latinos are subjected to searches far greater than whites. In conclusion, by adopting a narrow statutory construction that focuses on ensuring that registration numbers and letters, not cosmetic slogans, are visible, this court can save the statute from being declared unconstitutional, provide law enforcement with very reasonable parameters, and guarantee our citizens fair enforcement of the statute. Mr. Chief Justice, that concludes my opening remarks. And if I could, I wanted to transition to why the Garden State slogan does really not advance the purpose of the statute. And I wanted to cite a couple of examples.
May I ask a question first?
Yes.
Just to clarify the facts here. We know that the parties agreed that Garden State was covered. Was it covered in its entirety? Was part of it covered? How much was covered?
I looked at the photo that was admitted into evidence, and my understanding is that Garden State was completely covered by the frame, and that New Jersey was completely visible, and all the letters and numbers were completely visible, Justice Ravenet.
Thank you.
And with respect to the, with respect to that, Chief Justice, it was a stipulated motion to suppress, as you indicated, but there were very telling things that came out from the judge's findings. And of course, I represent an individual client here, Mr. Carter, who's currently serving the 10th with a 5. And the judge ruled that this stop was absolutely pretextual. And he also said something very significant for purposes of this argument. And I quote, "To think otherwise would be to say that the police had some real concern that this wasn't a valid plea." So the police, according to, I know there was no testimony taken, but the judge found that basically the police thought it was a valid plea, but this was a very, very minuscule violation. And that was the basis for the stop, what the judge referred to as a very minuscule violation. So the defense argument below was that the statute was being applied pretextually, that the police do not have a right to pull a car over if Conquer Cancer is blocked, for example. That was one of the examples given below, or if Short of Please is blocked. And as we know from the testimony from the police officer in Roman Rosado, and from what the assistant prosecutor said at the motion to suppress stipulated hearing in Carter, Rosado, Officer Warrington, said, quote, "We were doing these traffic stops to develop criminal investigations." And the assistant prosecutor in Carter said, and I quote, "Officers regularly stop vehicles for having obstructed plates." Now, Chief Justice Ravenet, you had discussed some of the data. And of course, if this were some type of drug transaction and we were dealing with low-level possessory offenses or low-level dealers, typically prosecutors and law enforcement want to go up the chain to get at the dealers. And you had mentioned that the AOC data had 117,000 tickets and 120,000 tickets respectively, and zero tickets for dealers. I think that really is very telling, and it's a very compelling point in terms of how this statute is really being enforced. It's not being enforced against the rich upper-class person in Bedminster driving a Mercedes. It's being enforced against primarily public defender clients who are poor, powerless, and disenfranchised. Now I want to move on, if I could, to an example. And this is the Animal Friendly example, where Animal Friendly is on the bottom of the plate. There's no Garden State whatsoever on the bottom of the plate because it doesn't exist for the specialty plates generally. And the Animal Friendly plate has two dogs, a cat, one bird, a total of 4 cartoon characters. Under my interpretation, on behalf of Mr. Carter, covering any of those 4 characters should not support a finding of reasonable articulable suspicion to pull the vehicle over. Under the Attorney General's interpretation, as I understand the Attorney General's presentation, that would in fact justify a stop, because it's every piece of paint, every little detail on a plate is considered a marking, and any de minimis violation is a basis to pull the car over. The same with Short of Please, which is one of the examples utilized at the stipulated hearing. It was actually admitted in evidence, this particular license plate. We have an artistic rendition on Short of Please of a lighthouse, ocean, sand, and 6 birds. My interpretation on behalf of Mr. Carter is that covering part or all of the lighthouse, ocean, sand, or the 6 birds would not constitute reasonable articulable suspicion, as long as the vehicle is otherwise lawful. And that's very important. Liberty State Park, the same thing, artistic rendition of seven American flags, Statue of Liberty, water, grass, and Ellis Island. Same example, I don't think covering any of those up would constitute reasonable suspicion. Why? The essence of this statute, and as I read any marking in the context of the entire statute and some of the neighboring statutes, is must be read as only precluding the obstruction of the unique identifying information on the plate. And that unique identifying information is exactly what you put into the MDT, the mobile data terminal, as was discussed in Donuts.
Mr. Russo, question for you. Do you know how the word markings is used in any other motor vehicle statutes? Have you checked into that? Because you're asking us to interpret markings as very specific, the letters and numbers that comprise each of our licenses and identifying numbers, letters and numbers. But the legislature may, and I don't know the answer to this, have used markings in a way that in a different statute that might implicate this.
Justice Patterson, I don't know any statutory schemes other than this particular motor vehicle scheme that utilizes markings. But I think I should extrapolate a little further on my prior point, if I wasn't totally clear. When the MDT information is put into the computer, typically before a stop is effectuated, what is put in is merely the license plate number, not any of the other surplusage data.
Understand. All I'm saying is the meaning of the term markings may be elsewhere in the motor vehicle code. I'm just asking if you happen to know how it's used.
I do not know the term markings being utilized in other aspects of the code, Justice Patterson. I do not.
Under your view of the statute, if both Garden State and New Jersey were entirely covered, would that justify a stop?
It would not, so long as the numbers and the letters were totally visible and clear, not concealed, and not obstructed.
So how does that help an officer distinguish between, obviously our license plates for the most part are sort of a light beige. There are many states with white license plates and other sort of light neutral colors. How does an officer know this is a New Jersey plate and not one from those other states if both New Jersey and Garden State are covered?
Well, first and foremost, New Jersey, in my view, my review of all the license plates across the country, may have the most unique plate in the nation. Why do I say that? Because in 1979, when we started with the blue plates and still kept the Garden State on the bottom as the standard issue plate, the dash was replaced by a little insignia map, and we have a double helix hologram that starts above the insignia map and below. And it's a canary yellow. It's a very unique color based upon, of course, the Eastern Goldfinch as being the state bird. And but there's actually a committee on this. The committee, the Reflexorized License Plate Selection Committee, to determine the appearance of the plate. And the committee settled on the goldfinch yellow, fading the pale yellow at the bottom of the plate, and a brighter yellow band across the top of the
That's
plate.
All real nice, but at 50 miles an hour in the dark, I think all your very careful views and explanation now doesn't really help.
Well, that's a very good comment. And I agree with that, but if it's 50 miles an hour that the police officer, that the driver is driving and the police officer is on the road and the police officer observes, at 50 miles an hour, the police officer, I assume, would not be able to observe Garden State or New Jersey. But what is essential there, in my view, are the
letters. It might be helpful, though, at least to something else.
It could be in remote cases, Justice Fernandez-Vina. I think it could be. We can always find those examples. And a matter of fact, Justice Fernandez.
Well, it's similar with you. That's you just cite a lot of points that you can read, but you're doing it carefully in your office. You're not out at night with the stress of whatever you're doing. So I'm just pointing out that what you what happens in the field is very different what happens in the quiet of your office with the bright lights.
That's a very fair point. But police officers are specially trained, and the Attorney General came before this court in Presley and talked about the extensive experience and training that law enforcement has.
That's like it was that 2020 vision. I don't think they can do any better than that.
Well, yeah, well, that's a fair point. But my response, getting back to the example, Justice Fernandez-Zena, of the Attorney General in their initial brief and during their opening remarks today, they talked about the statute being necessary to make identifications of criminals. And in their brief, they talked about, for example, a hit and run accident. And I'd like to respond to that because I've been practicing for approximately 35 years. The majority of that has been criminal law. And I've seen a lot of BOLOs, you know, be on the lookout. I have never seen a BOLO which talked about Garden State. And getting to the Attorney General's example, the person is on the bus, observed a hit and run accident. They're looking at a downward trajectory, and they only see Garden State, and that's the identifier for this hit and run. Well, that would be a very rare example, but let me give you another example. University of Michigan or University of Delaware, they are both state-sanctioned plates in New Jersey. So that same hit and run accident, the passenger's on the bus looking down and doesn't see University of on the bottom of the plate, but sees Delaware. That could very easily lead to a misidentification. So
I thought the standard, as you had said out earlier, was, is there a rational basis?
Yes.
So there are, following up on Justice Fernandez-Vina's hypo, there are situations where a car zips by, even in broad daylight, and a trained officer gets a quick look at this car going 90 miles per hour on the parkway or the turnpike and can only make out a partial plate in that limited amount of time. Are you suggesting there's not a rational basis to also want to take steps and ensure that the name of the state is also identifiable, if not the Garden State, and cases where that is on the plate? No rational basis for that?
No. First and foremost, it's not a public safety statute, as you indicated earlier, Chief Justice Ratner. It's definitely not a public safety statute. But secondly, what is inputted and what is relevant are the numbers and the letters. And that's what's inputted, because the only question is, in this non-public safety statute, is whether or not the plate matches the registration.
I beg to differ. If you have the make and model of the car and a partial plate, and 10 minutes later, as part of the investigation, you come upon that same make and model and the same partial plate, it's not a perfect match, but it can serve a rational purpose to aid an investigation, no?
It could in limited circumstances, but that is not the purpose of the statute as articulated in State v. Donis, nor is that the purpose of the statute as articulated in the statute, and nor is it part of the plain meaning of the statute. Identification by lay witnesses was never a purpose of the statute for solving crimes. It was whether or not it was determined whether or not the vehicle is lawfully registered, whether or not the plate matches the registration. That is the sole purpose or the main purpose for this statutory scheme. It might have some very, very collateral remote examples that we can think of, but does that take away from the fact that this casts such a wide, wide, wide net?
Maybe you're saying that identifiers on licenses have no public safety purpose. And I mean by that identification of cars generally. It's just a collateral benefit, but public safety is not involved in requiring cars to have license plates that have identifying markings on them.
I don't think that cosmetic slogans are linked to the identification.
Didn't say that. We're talking about ability to identify a car through what is on the license plate. And that includes being able to identify what state it's from, does it not?
I think that there are some examples where that is possible. Absolutely. I think those examples are rare. Typically an eyewitness, in my experience anyway, and I don't know if it's the court's experience, but my experience doing criminal defense work, typically the eyewitness is not identifying a plate. Typically they're identifying the make and model of the car. they're not zeroing in on the plate. And I don't know if I've ever seen, maybe once or twice in my career, that I've actually seen the plate being essential from an eyewitness. Typically, the eyewitness is looking at the make and model of the car, you know, a four-door Buick with a damaged right hubcap, something like that. There are examples, I'm sure, rare examples, where it does happen, where it does assist in identification. But this statute was never intended to be about identification of suspects by lay witnesses. It was intended solely to make a determination as to whether or not the vehicle is lawfully registered.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Yes, Your Honor. The Woolley Court, since Woolley, with respect to the issue of identification, two state courts, New Mexico, Land of Enchantment, and Maine, Vacation Land, construed their statutes narrowly, holding that their statutes could only require the display of the registration numbers, not the slogan. If the legislature and the DMV needed the Garden State slogan for vehicle identification, it would not have authorized 100 specialty license plates omitting Garden State. And I don't know if the court wants to hear from me with respect to Hine. I could adopt Ms. Perrone's arguments with respect to Hine, but I do have a few points on Hine though before I close. I agree with Ms. Perrone with respect to Hine that we should really adopt the dissent and refuse therefore to adopt Hine in New Jersey. I think it would be a very acute departure from our jurisprudence, especially in light of the fact that in 1987, this court rejected the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule. I think it would be very inconsistent then to have a good faith exception up front antecedently for a mistake of law. Also, the dissent had a very good point, Justice Sotomayor, in Hine. She stated, and I would like to quote this, there's no indication that excluding an officer's mistake of law from the reasonableness inquiry has created problems. Before Hine was decided, and now this is me speaking, the quote is over, before Hine was decided, and I think this is very important, every circuit court in the United States, with the exception of the Eighth Circuit, rejected mistake of law for a constitutional violation and applied the exclusionary rule. So before Hine was decided, all circuit courts except for the Eighth Circuit squarely held that a law enforcement officer's mistake of law was a constitutional violation and indeed applied the exclusionary rule. And also prior to Hine, 13 states declined to provide a good faith exception for mistakes of law. So I think that's very significant. I refer to court to United States versus Lopez Soto, a Ninth Circuit case, which is very, very significant. And there, the Ninth Circuit, of course, this is a pre-Hine case, stated, and there's very similar language in Puzio on this issue, that there is no exception to the exclusionary rule for police who do not act in accordance with the governing law. Lastly, with respect to Justice Sotomayor's dissent, Ms. Perrone talked about a fixed yardstick for the law. And Justice Sotomayor talked about, she framed the issue as whether a police officer's understanding of the law is an input into the reasonableness inquiry, into the reasonableness analysis, or whether the inquiry instead takes the law as a given and assesses an officer's understanding of the facts against that fixed legal yardstick. So Justice Sotomayor, she objectively reviews the facts, and police officers have that expertise with respect to facts, against the actual law, the state of the law, not as the law enforcement officer may interpret the law. So the issue is whether the facts satisfy the relevant statutory or constitutional standard. It's the rule of law that governs, not the officer's conception of what the rule of law is. So according to Justice Sotomayor, the police officer's reasonable misunderstanding of the law is not relevant, and the police officer's understanding of the law is likewise not relevant. So under her dissent, the police officer's reasonable mistake of law or unreasonable mistake of law is not relevant. Mistakes of law are not considered. And again, it's a fixed legal yardstick. And Justice Sotomayor also indicated that the circuit courts that rejected mistake of law pre-Hine did not have any problem in applying that standard. She stated that there was no indication that excluding an officer's mistake of law from the reasonableness inquiry created a problem for law enforcement. So unless there's any questions with respect to Hine, that would conclude my presentation today.
Thank you, Mr. Russo. Ms. Thompson.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I would like to join in with Ms. Perrone and Ms. Russo's argument. And I also would just like to clarify that I failed to note at the beginning of the argument that I am appearing here today as amicus on behalf of Mr. Roman Rosato. Affirming the appellate division's ruling in Roman Rosato will prevent the off-label use of 39333 as a tool to develop criminal investigations. The justification of these purely discretionary stops through an overbroad interpretation of the statute only serves to sow distrust between communities of color and the police. And as the scope of police abuses during traffic stops becomes more apparent, this is not the time to allow unfettered discretion to justify a seizure. And to that end, race remains central to the issues that are presented here. The tiny fraction of these cases that make it to this court for consideration are mostly certified on review of a suppression motion denial or the use of the exclusionary rule. And by the time they reach this court, police aren't coming up empty-handed. The alleged suspicion has a veneer of reasonableness by the time it reaches this court's eyes, because in those cases, there are open warrants or some sort of evidence that has been found. But what is out of view is the fact that hundreds of thousands of people are stopped by police each year in traffic stops. And what is out of view is that in the vast, vast majority of those cases, the traffic stops find nothing. And what is also out of view is the invasive, frightening, and humiliating interactions for those who have done nothing wrong and the after effects of those interactions that warp behavior and expectations of law enforcement and government. Black and Latino communities fundamentally experience these police encounters differently than white communities. And those experiences are deeply steeped in trauma. If I may, I would like to speak about a Rutgers Camden study that was just published in February in the Journal of Adolescent Health, which examined the health implications of children who have witnessed police stops while not being themselves involved in the stop. What that study found is that Black, Hispanic, and multiracial youth experience much higher rates of distress than their white counterparts. And the researchers found, and I quote, that the feelings of distress could be linked to the fact that young people of color, particularly Black and multiracial children, experience police stops that describe instances of officer intrusiveness and perceived procedural injustices. That is, whether or not the child thought people being stopped were being treated equally, or if the officer was explaining why they were stopped, or whether their rights were being respected. Those were all influencing how these children experienced the stop. And these interactions may be a significant driver of mental health inequities among urban-born youth. And so while incidences of excessive use of force constitute the kind of the most blatant and deeply scarring representation of these instances, these everyday interactions, these everyday stops create psychic harm by a thousand cuts, and they destroy community faith in policing, and they erode the public trust in police. And State v. Garcia, the incident cases in the forthcoming State v. Myers, Naima, all represent a continuum of cases addressing the same galvanizing issue, which is whether the discretionary behavior of law enforcement, while sheltering under the broadest interpretations of the law, are arbitrary invasions into the constitutional rights of the individual, and particularly of individuals of color. And the justification of unjustified stops under the guise of this sort of statutory directive feels like it creates unnecessary contact and a generalized distrust. So regardless of intent, the end result of giving such broad latitude is that it will be used in such a way, given what we know about the numbers of stops and who is being stopped, that Black and Brown people will continue to be disproportionately affected here unless and until the statute is clarified and delimited by this court.
questions, anyone? Anything else you'd like to add, Ms. Thompson?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is CJ Griffin, and I didn't mean to exclude you earlier when I said anyone can adopt prior arguments. That applies as well. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. I will accept your invitation, and I adopt fully the arguments by Ms. Perone, Mr. Russo, and Ms. Thompson. And representing the Latino Leadership Alliance, we especially adopt Ms. Thompson's powerful words. And our criminal justice system disproportionately tickets, searches, arrests, prosecutes, incarcerates, and uses force against Black and Latino people. And one significant thing that we can do is to, you know, to fix that problem is to limit the discretion by police to make stops that really advance no public safety purpose or are done purely for pretextual reasons. And this case gives you the opportunity to limit it in some way. So I will jump right into the no public safety purpose. Regarding the words guard and state, which are the words that are issue in at issue in both of these cases, many of you have questioned what the rational safety purpose would be to ticket drivers for covering the words, whether it's a minor covering as in Roman Rosado or completely covering as in guard and state. And I'll be quick. I hope that you've read my brief. If not, I would ask you to read pages 7 to 17 of the brief. Because I provide a legislative history that I think is interesting and really sheds a light on why we have guard and state on our license plates at all. And the answer is for no public safety purpose whatsoever. My research shows that guard and state was placed on the license plates because the farming industry lobbied for it because they wanted guard and state to become the state motto. And two different governors actually vetoed this bill, two different bills in the 1950s. And their veto messages spoke about how there was no public safety purpose to put these on the license plates, and that it was really solely for to advertise the state and an industry. There was some disagreement whether guard and state was even the appropriate way to advertise the state. The egg industry really wanted it to be the egg state. I'm glad they didn't win. But the ultimate outcome is that the lobby won, the governors were had their vetoes overridden, and now we have it on there. But since then, a lot of other groups have lobbied to get their slogans on there. And so I can have an equality plate, and Mr. Russo can use his animal-friendly plate, and we can all send different messages to the public about, you know, what we support and what we want to say. I'll just refer to my brief and say that then being punished for not displaying guard and state, I do think raises First Amendment concerns. Regarding the words New Jersey, I do think it's a slightly more difficult question. I think it comes closer to having a rational basis, but we would still ask the court to use a common sense definition. That is, if you're going to say New Jersey can't be completely covered up, we still think that a minor covering, that these license plate brackets often cover the very tippy top words, that should not justify a stop and giving police officers that level of discretion. Again, we know these stops disproportionately affect people of color. But with regard to New Jersey, you know, I would ask you to look at 39.3.32, which Mr. Russo did quickly cite, but I think looking closer, shed some light on this, because the legislature said that if your license plate is lost, destroyed, or, quote, defaced so that the numbers thereon are illegible, end quote, you have to get a new plate within 24 hours. And so the words guard and state and New Jersey were not words that they felt requires you to go out and get a new plate within 24 hours. And so I take that to mean that they view the numbers to be the important public safety issue for officers to be able to view. And I will rely upon Mr. Russo and Mr. Perone's arguments as to Hine, but we ask the court to reject it because now, especially now, with all the work that we've been doing to promote racial justice the past year, now is not the time to depart from decades of jurisprudence with regard to this issue.
So Ms. Griffin, do we have to reach the Hine argument if we interpret the statute the way you're suggesting?
So I don't think so, because I think it's the doctrine of constitutional avoidance gets you there. But also, I don't think that the officer was reasonable. And one criticism of Heim is that it would encourage people, law enforcement officers, just to not learn what the law is. And there was a concession today by the state. I believe I heard that there's been no training of police officers on how to enforce this particular statute, and evidently no training about enforcing the one that would penalize dealers, because that enforcement's not happening. And so the state's then wanting to use that lack of doing the proper training in order to justify this being a reasonable stop. And one of my big problems with Hein is Justice Sotomayor's dissent, which is, how would the average person that wants to being pulled over by the police, which I think is all of us, but especially people of color, how would you conduct yourself to avoid being stopped by the police? Because what Hein effectively does is says it's going to change every statute on the book from you cannot do conduct X, which we can hopefully understand, or we're presumed to understand, to you must not do conduct X, or any conduct that a police officer might reasonably but mistakenly believe is also prohibited by this law. And so it almost turns every statute into something that's vague and ambiguous that we don't know as the public how to comply with. And it's one thing that our jurisprudence authorizes pretextual stops. I would love for the court to reverse that. I doubt that you will. But it's another thing if we allow pretextual stops it's one thing to allow pretextual stops for actual violations of law, but then it becomes another thing to allow pretextual stops when you didn't violate a law at all, which is effectively what Hein does.
And when you say Hein, you're referring to the majority view. Can you address the difficulty that can be argued exists with trying to implement Justice Kagan's concurrence and her view of that standard?
I'm referring to either standard because I think they're both completely unworkable. And I'm not a criminal lawyer. I learned the criminal law to do these cases because I care about the rights of New Jersey citizens. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm a smart person, and I have a lot of experience reviewing statutes and doing legislative history. I can't really figure out how it would apply, other than perhaps being too deferential to law enforcement. And again, that's where I think Justice Sotomayor's comments about how we could possibly avoid being stopped if we can allow these reasonable mistakes of law, whatever that means, to be a basis for stopping us.
I did not mean to unfairly put you on the spot. Thank you.
Thank you. I did not feel burdened. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Ms. Oberholzer, rebuttal?
Yes, please. First of all, I want to be clear that my lack of knowledge of training is not an admission that there's no training going on. That's not my area. So I also would like to respond to Justice Albin's question. I've read 39.3-33C, and that specifically penalizes the sale or distribution or transfer of plates with the intent to be used to conceal or with the purpose of evading law enforcement. Your average car dealer who puts a license plate frame with his dealership name on it is not doing so with the intent or the purpose of evading law enforcement. He's doing so to advertise. So I don't think that would be a violation of this provision. So I think that's why it's not being enforced against the average dealership, because they're not violating this provision because they're not doing so with that purpose.
But
apples to oranges.
You raise a valid point as to that particular statute. But as we discussed earlier, dealers may be on the hook under 3-33 itself, under an aiding and abetting theory, by providing those very frames. You don't have the purpose of evading law enforcement in 3-33.
But the Motor Vehicle Code isn't a criminal code per se, so I'm not sure that aiding and abetting applies.
Even so, you have the Attorney General has the power to enjoin businesses from taking part in practices that violate New Jersey law.
Understood.
You could file an action to enjoin every dealership in the state from issuing these plates. Do you agree?
I don't know, but possibly.
Well, doesn't the Attorney General represent the Motor Vehicle Commission and the Chief Administrator that's supposedly advising and regulating dealerships that are authorized to do business in New Jersey?
Yes.
And has any advice gone out through that via?
Not that I don't know the answer to that question.
Look, knowing that they're issuing plates that will subject every one of their customers to a violation of our motor vehicles statute has to empower the commissioner, the director of motor vehicles, to have the power to enjoin that practice. Do you agree?
I would think so. I really don't know.
Have it done by the end of the day.
As for the argument about the number of people that are being stopped under this for this violation, we simply don't know what the statistical realities are because this issue wasn't raised below and there was no record developed. There are a number of different ways that this statute can be violated by not having plates, by not having a front plate, by having your license plate covered completely with a cover that is too dirty or too opaque to see through, by having your license plate in your back window in a place where an officer wouldn't know to look for it. These are all violations of this statute, and we do not know what percentage of the stops under this statute are for violations of the frame provision because this claim wasn't raised below in either of these cases.
Counsel, so there's been some discussion that a large percentage of the people stopped pursuant to the statute are people of color. So how do you respond to the argument that the interpretation of the statute that you advance leads to a disproportionate application of the statute against people of color?
Well, again, because we don't know how many people that were stopped for this provision were people of color because this claim hasn't been raised below to allow that those facts to be developed below. We simply don't have that the basis to develop that claim. And I understand it's a valid concern, but we need a record below. And that's why these issues shouldn't be raised for the first time in the Supreme Court. It needs to be developed in a trial court. We keep hearing that the purpose of this statute is to identify the owner, is to identify whether the car is registered and the licensing status of the owner. There's nothing in the statute that says that, and that's not what this court said in Donis. What this court said in Donis, and I quote, is the purpose of the law is to identify the owner of the car should the need arise from his license plate. The language about the registration status of the car and so on refers to a mobile data terminal check, which is actually what the case in Donis was about. There's a single sentence about the purpose of this statute, and it simply says to identify the owner of the car. It doesn't limit it to what that use is for, and it, aside from not being what Donis was about, there's no reason to interpret that language as to limiting it to being not for law enforcement purposes. So I think that that's a real overreading of Donis. I think this is a minor point, but the shape of New Jersey as the dash on the license plate doesn't appear on vanity plates. So if you cover up New Jersey and whatever language is at the bottom of the plate on a vanity plate that has, say, someone's full name and doesn't have a standard dash, you're going to have nothing but the color of the license plate to identify the car as a New Jersey plate. Woolley versus Maynard did not find that identifying the car as a private vehicle or as a New Jersey vehicle, as the state vehicle, was not a valid reason to cover up the state motto. What they did was they rejected the argument that distinguishing it between a private vehicle and another type of vehicle, government vehicle or a commercial vehicle, was not a valid reason, specifically because New Hampshire license plate had a specific configuration of letters and numbers that identified private, distinguished private vehicles from other types of vehicles. The Ortiz case in New Mexico merely referenced Woolley in dicta in a single sentence or maybe two as an example of how a license plate could be altered without fraudulent intent, which was the issue in that case. And the main case, Berube, was specifically decided as a statutory interpretation case on state law grounds and did not adopt Woolley versus Maynard at all. So those were the main points I wanted to respond to, unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you. Thank you to all counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.